Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of OEM TV. I'm Eric Mills with Microsoft. I do Windows Server Marketing, and I'm joined by Keith Mayer again. How's it going, Keith?
Great, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, what's really great about today, Keith, is we get to talk about Hyper-V and clustering. Isn't that exciting?
It is. There's so many new improvements. I can't wait to talk more about them.
All right. So everybody knows Windows Server 2016 is out and about, getting rave reviews, and it includes some great enhancements in Hyper-V, which is the hypervisor that runs on bare metal and supports server and desktop operating systems. So Keith, tell us a little more about Hyper-V and what's new.
Yeah, definitely. There's a ton of stuff that's new with Hyper-V and Server 2016, but I think when I talk with most people, what grabs their attention immediately is some of the scalability improvements that Hyper-V has with Windows Server 2016. Not to say that Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 were shabby. I mean,
yeah, you can slouch there.
Yeah, it could have up to 4 terabytes of physical RAM in a server with Server 2012 and 2012 R2. But with 2016, I mean, get ready, up to 24 terabytes of physical RAM per server. Almost two times the number of logical processor cores, up to 512 logical processor cores, up to 12 terabytes of memory per VM. Wow. I mean, those huge VMs, and our Windows Server and Hyper-V and SQL Server teams have done some really interesting scale performance testing with large SQL Server virtualized footprints on Server 2016 Hyper-V, with like 5.5 terabytes of memory in a SQL VM, offering upwards of 95% plus what the same workload on a pure hardware non-virtualized physical box would offer. I mean, only having like a couple percentage points difference for the virtualization benefit that you get. It's just amazing stuff. And up to 240 virtual processors per VM for, wow, even for the most compute intensive, memory intensive, storage intensive workloads you can dream of. You know, we're seeing customers, it used to be that the top echelon, the top couple percent of applications and enterprise customer accounts would remain on bare metal just because of performance concerns, and we're not seeing that anymore. Everything's getting virtualized with Hyper-V and Server 2016.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where people were saying, you know, you just can't virtualize SQL Server. It just doesn't perform well. And wow, with these new limits, so now I can make a virtual machine on Windows Server 2016 that has 12 terabytes of RAM assigned to it.
Yep, up to per VM. Yep.
And 240 processors, virtual CPUs assigned to a virtual machine.
Amazing.
Yeah. So yeah. You can pretty much virtualize anything at this point. And so there is still a little bit of overhead, you're saying, but the flexibility and the scalability that you get really is going to make up for that in most cases.
Yeah, and I know there's probably a lot of people that are watching us today thinking, I don't even have a whole rack of servers that takes up that kind of capacity today. But yeah, Really the message you want to think about then with Server 2016 and Hyper-V is, as you grow and continue to grow, there's no limit, really, no practical limit on how far you're going to be able to grow and scale with Hyper-V and Server 2016 as you move forward.
Right. Nice. And, you know, also another thing I want to talk about, Keith, is Linux support on Hyper-V.
Yeah.
You know, I have so many people that I talk to that they believe that Hyper-V is just a Windows Server thing or just a Microsoft thing. But can you clear the air for us on this one? Can I run Linux on Hyper-V?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's all of the common Linux distros, ranging from whether it's CentOS or Ubuntu or SUSE or Red Hat, FreeBSD, you know, pretty much everything out there. We have a team in our engineering group in Windows Server that focuses specifically on ensuring a great experience, first-class experience for those important Linux distros on our Hyper-V platform. And it's no secret that in addition to using Hyper-V on-prem, that like many customers do with Windows Server on-prem, Hyper-V is also the hypervisor that our Azure cloud platform uses. And we've got, you know, almost 30% of the workloads running in Azure are running virtualized Linux workloads today. When you think about the scale of the Azure Cloud Platform, the message that really brings home to you when you're thinking about Hyper-V in your data center is that I don't know of any other virtual hypervisor that's scaled as broadly and widely as Hyper-V is across the Azure clouds and has as much testing across such a diverse set of Linux workloads as the Hyper-V hypervisor does. And so that Azure experience is something that any customer can take advantage of based on the improvements we've made around Hyper-V and our Linux integration services with Hyper-V and Server 2016.
Right. Yeah, great. Thank you for clearing that up. So many people don't realize that they can run Windows Server virtual machines right alongside Linux virtual machines, right alongside desktop virtual machines if they want to, and Hyper-V will run all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Yep. Well, you know, when we talk about Hyper-V and virtualization, clustering comes right hand in hand with that because you can still build physical clusters. You don't have to virtualize, but so many people are choosing to virtualize and build, Hyper-V clusters these days. Can you talk a little more about some of the advancements in clustering that we've seen with Windows Server 2016 and how Hyper-V fits into that?
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. Clustering and Hyper-V go together like peanut butter and jelly, right? As soon as you start virtualizing lots of workloads, you want to make sure that you have those workloads being delivered in a highly available manner, and that's what clustering adds, the ability to cluster together multiple Hyper-V hosts so that if you have any host-level hardware disruption or network disruption that affects a host, those VMs can fail over to one of the other hosts within your cluster and minimize any downtime around that. One of the benefits that Server 2016 has added with clustering is we want to make moving your clusters to Server 2016 so that you can take advantage of some of those new Hyper-V features we were talking about as seamless as possible. And in the old days, before Server 2016, moving from one operating system to another in a clustered environment oftentimes made the approach that was used was bringing up a whole new cluster on your new OS and then manually migrating VMs from one cluster to the other cluster, right? It worked. It was clean, but it became a time-intensive process. So with Server 2016, we're introducing mixed OS release clusters. If you have an existing 2012 R2 Hyper-V host cluster, you can begin adding Server 2016 hosts into that same cluster and support that coexistence between those two different operating systems within the same cluster. You can live migrate your VMs over to the Server 2016 hosts. And once you've got all of your VMs running on Server 2016 hosts, you can then remove out the Server 2012 R2 hosts and have a native Server 2016 cluster. So it becomes a very easy, seamless, progressive way of moving your cluster forward. And it's also a way that oftentimes aligns with the incremental purchases that customers may make in upgrading portions of their IT infrastructure. If it's a large cluster, a lot of customers may not be able to upgrade the entire cluster hardware all at once. They may be doing, a few servers at a time, and it allows you to gradually move those clusters over to Server 2016 in a way that aligns to the business.
Nice. And that sounds like it's a lot more a lot less error-prone, a lot less manual, and a lot more automated, which is going to save IT pros a lot of time.
Yep, definitely. Now, in addition to those mixed-mode cluster support to facilitate rolling cluster upgrades, there's also been some important resiliency enhancements to Server 2016 clustering that really works well in a lot of environments to provide a more supportive environment for running Hyper-V VMs, even if there's perhaps intermittent network instability that may occasionally occur. In the old days, before 2016, if you had an environment that was running a clustered Hyper-V environment, it worked great, but if you started running into any type of intermittent network communication issues, what sometimes happened is you'd get what we call in the clustering world some flapping that occurred, where a cluster host would kind of fall out of the cluster, begin failing over VMs. The cluster host would then come back into the cluster because the network communications would resume. And so if you had things that were going on at a network layer, like switch upgrades or switch issues or port issues or whatnot, it could cause some instability of your VMs because they kept trying to fail over and fail back and fail over and fail back. with the improved VM resiliency offer features in Server 2016, what happens is if the cluster detects that it's more of a intermittent problem like that, it will attempt to continue running the VMs for a period of time in an isolated mode where the physical node is isolated away from the rest of the cluster, but your VMs are still up and running. And then if it continues to progress, then it'll remove that physical host out of the cluster for that period of time, it'll quarantine that host essentially, and fail over your VMs into the onto one of the new surviving hosts. So what that does is it provides a much more stable environment, even in situations where you may be running into some network layer intermittent issues that would otherwise have affected cluster communications.
Sure. So you know, people that have run into these kind of weird network behaviors in the past have had essentially some downtime as the cluster tried to figure out, is that node still in the cluster or is it not in the cluster? And now with VM resiliency, there's a little more intelligence built into the system to recover from those things gracefully, overall increasing uptime. And in most cases, an IT pro may not even have to deal with that issue at all. The cluster will just fix itself.
Yep. And then one of the last feature areas that I see valuable for larger clustered Hyper-V environments that are across multiple racks of equipment, for instance, is in 2016, we now have fault domain awareness baked into clustering so that, you know, before 2016, clustering knew about where, you know, the fault boundaries around each physical Hyper-V host node in the cluster. But if those nodes were spread across a couple of racks, chances are that the network communications, storage, connectivity, and perhaps power going into those racks still was somewhat of a single point of failure that could affect multiple nodes. And so now with Server 2016, you can inform the cluster about how you've got your servers racked and have it partition out fault domains for one rack of nodes versus another rack of nodes so they can more intelligently place VM workloads. That's really important as your cluster sizes grow.
Nice. So yeah, for larger data centers that want to take advantage of making the cluster more aware of power and, you know, how things are racked, that's going to overall increase uptime again.
Yep, definitely. Definitely.
Nice.
Well, then the other big change that's happened with Hyper-V in Server 2016, as I mentioned, there's been lots of incremental updates for things like, you know, being able to hot add memory and hot add NICs and things of that nature as you scale individual VMs. So you don't have to shut down and restart VMs anymore for those changes to take effect in Server 2016. But the other big feature of Hyper-V in Server 2016 is the ability for Hyper-V to run on a nano footprint server installation. And I know some of you may be aware already, Nano is our uber small server footprint OS. It's really optimized for very specialized workloads that need to be close to the hardware and have a lot of, don't require the other components of Windows Server or Server Core in that footprint. So Hyper-V is one of those Nano workloads, along with some other infrastructure-oriented workloads, like the Storage Spaces Direct workload we talked about in one of our storage episodes,
right.
that runs on Nano as well.
So a Nano server instance, can I deploy that as a virtual machine also?
You can, and in fact, we have a lot of customers that are moving down the path of doing that for deploying containerized solutions on top of a Nano footprint. And I think in one of our upcoming sessions, we'll be talking more about container technologies with Windows Server 2016 as well.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this episode. There's a lot of new cool stuff in Hyper-V you definitely want to check out. It's included in Windows Server Essentials, Standard, and Data Center. Windows Server 2016 has this new version that we're talking about. So if you own Essentials, Standard, or Data Center, you already own Hyper-V. It's also available as a free download. It's called Hyper-V Server. So if you just want to check out Hyper-V for free, you can download it and fire up some virtual machines. It's once you start adding Windows Server virtual machines that you need to purchase those Windows Server licenses. But you can fire up some Linux virtual machines on Hyper-V and not pay Microsoft a penny. So, yeah, I guess that wraps it up for this episode. Thanks for joining us for OEM TV. Keith, thank you for your intelligence again, and we'll see you next time, OEM TV.